And of course, any show on postdocs is deserving of a re-air, as postdocs need so much more love and attention.
Zoom a little zoom in a rocket ship. Off we go on a trip. Heading for the moon at a rocket clip. We're gonna zoom, zoom, rocket. Zoom a little zoom, now we're almost free from the Earth's gravity. Zoom into the moon at terrific speed, because there is no friction. Soon we'll see if the moon is made out of green cheese. Ha 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 ha. Zoom, we're here at the moon. Let's see what the moon is like.
Hi everyone, you're listening to my science project on CITR 101.9 FM. Today we have a show all about postdoctoral fellows, the much maligned and sometimes neglected workers in the labs at UBC and other universities nationwide. And I'm your host for the show, Julia.
And I'm your sometimes co-host, Anne, with you today in the studio with a lot of great postdocs.
We do. So I think we should get to know our postdocs that we have here in the station with us. So if you could all introduce yourselves, please.
Yeah, hello. My name is Sonia Zishi, and I'm from UBC Medical Genetics Department.
I'm Tim Vines from UBC Zoology.
And I'm Louise Kuchel from UBC Zoology as well.
And I would ask you to explain your involvement in the Postdoc Cafe at the Life Sciences Institute, and we'll talk about exactly what that is in a second.
I was one of the original three that started the Postdoc Cafe, which is basically a group of postdocs getting together to share postdoc experiences and develop our careers further.
I guess my involvement started when they had a meeting on mentoring, and I came along to that, and it was fascinating, and I met all these guys there, and I've been getting more involved ever since.
I was another of the three founders, and I was involved in setting up kind of some of the infrastructure we have, like the web page and the administration we have with the LSC.
And Anne?
Well, I can definitely vouch for the fact that this Postdoc Cafe reaches more than just the organizers, because I've been along to a couple of the events and certainly benefit from the regular emails describing upcoming events and just keeping us all united, because I'm sure, as we'll touch on in today's program, postdocs are a really diverse group that's spread out across campus and we're hard to keep track of.
Yeah, and on my own behalf, I'm at the Life Sciences Institute myself, and so got involved because of where I live, basically, in the lab. And I think before we go any further, I'd like to just tell our listeners what we're going to be talking about today so they can have a bit of a sense of what to expect. I think the first thing, I was actually involved in, Anne and I were both involved in a short course this week where some high school students came to UBC, and we are both postdoctoral fellows, and we both had to explain to our groups what we were, and there are lots of questions, even from parents who came to drop their kids off. You're a postdoctoral fellow, or you're a student, so you're doing a degree. So I think the first order of business is for us to actually discuss what it means to be a postdoctoral fellow, both according to the sort of formal definitions and also according to what we feel is as an actual postdoctoral fellow. And the reason that we're doing the show today is that there are a lot of issues surrounding being a postdoc, for everything from job security to recognition and respect to credit on publications, funding issues. It's meant to be a stepping stone in one's career, but it's often a dead end for a lot of postdocs. And part of the mandate of the Postdoc Cafe at the Life Sciences Institute is to effect positive change for postdocs at UBC, and to really improve the situation for postdoctoral fellows, kind of along the lines, I think, that graduate students get a lot of support formally from the Institute. So we'll talk about those issues. We'll talk about why all of our listeners should care about this, because, of course, we're not just doing this show for us just because it's fun, but to get the word out there, and hopefully there will be other postdocs and maybe some graduate students listening who will be interested in what we have to say. And then we'll also talk about change that we're trying to affect right now and things that our listeners can do to get involved and catch people up in that respect. So, sound good, everyone?
Yeah.
Sounds good. Okay. So I think I'd like to return to what is a postdoc? What do we all think it is, and how does UBC perceive of them, and how are they perceived across the world?
I'll jump in and just say one of the biggest questions that I get is it a degree? And the answer is that no, it's not a degree, and many of us are really relieved to be done with the degree business. There are no more really educational hoops to jump through in the context of a degree. But we're sort of in that in-between phase, I guess, between finishing your PhD and your doctoral work and actually taking on leadership of a research group or a research team. I mean, there's lots of other things that I'm sure you can add to that. What would you add?
I guess one of the things is, like, relatives often ask then, well, so you're finished now, when are you getting a real job? So,
ouch.
I guess a postdoc is a necessary stepping stone after your PhD. You started your research career, but you're not independent yet, and you have to learn a lot more, and the postdoc is a great opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I guess as a postdoc, you're actively involved in a laboratory, you're paid to do research, and you also are learning a lot of managerial and leadership skills, as well as learning how to supervise students if you do go into an academic career. So there's a lot of skills that you learn aside from research, and you also learn much more how to set your research directions, which is something you get a taste of during your PhD, but you become much more independent at doing that at a postdoc stage.
Yeah, I've always, since I became a postdoc, I've always told people I've had a job rather than being a student. I guess you also start out, you leave behind the stipends, and when I did my PhD in the UK, it was pretty pitiful, the amount of money you get, and you actually start getting paid like you've got qualifications, and rather than you're just earning a degree, you're now actually employed and making use of your training.
I think I should also add that even though all of us in the studio here today are science postdocs, there does also exist the postdoc phenomenon in the arts community or in the humanities faculties. I think it's less of a chunk of the workers there, but it is still indeed possible to do a postdoc in the arts here at UBC and at most universities.
And I think that everything that we discuss here in terms of challenges and obstacles to overcome for science postdocs is tripled for arts postdocs, because their funding, their grants are so much less than ours. Science is a huge revenue generator for the university as well as for the labs of our principal investigators, or PIs as we often refer to them. And so art students have that much more of a challenge when it comes to getting the DOSH.
I think in summary I would say, though, that as a postdoc our main goals are to start to carve out our academic niche so that we might be in a position to carry on to become a group leader or a leader in that academic area. And we do that in the case of science by hopefully publishing as much as possible and in as good journals as possible. And as you mentioned, Louise, it also involves aspects of training where you can learn about managing a group, also about teaching undergraduates. Many of us get the opportunity to do a little bit of lecturing or tutoring or that sort of thing. And in that way, in this full-time job, I think we can say that confidently, we can hopefully develop to move on to the next stage of becoming an associate or assistant professor.
And let's define roughly what full-time job means in the context of a postdoc. Like, what are the hours that an average postdoc in the sciences, for example, but probably the arts, works in a given week or day?
I guess for me it depends hugely on the time of year. I work on fish, and I typically go out in the field quite a lot during the summer. So sometimes I've had 80, 90-hour weeks where you work all day, every day, whereas in the winter it slows down a lot and I work a sort of 9-to-5 day.
Yeah, I'd say there's very few postdocs who, especially in the sciences, but it goes across all fields, who do a 40-hour week. Most of us would do much more than that.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah, I guess the advantage of being a postdoc is that your time is very flexible, so often you don't really keep track of when you're working, because often I work at home sometimes, so it's kind of... And then you think about science all the time, so does it count if I think about science under the shower?
Yeah, and I think that's an important point, and one of the great things about doing what we do and actually being in research full stop is the flexibility of our schedules. And that, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, because you can take your work home with you really easily, but at the same time you can kind of break your day up and do things in the middle, and like this show. One thing I think I'd like to discuss and is to set us in context, the role of the postdoc and how it's changed over the last couple of decades, because I know it's really changed a lot. And doing a postdoc, even doing more than one postdoc, has become a norm. Tim, you look like you're burning.
Oh, yeah. You know, I was just worried something about Alan Turing, who is this English guy who was a massive influence in developing computers, and he became an Oxford professor at the age of, like, 21, I think it was.
So he invented the computer. No, is that Babbage?
No, he did some... He was one of the guys who cracked the Enigma code way back when, and he was he had a lot to do with the sort of early logic stuff, I think. But it was... He skipped out, I think, more or less, you know, doing this postdoc thing, and he just moved straight on to being... clearly a genius, but I guess since then there's been a huge increase in the amount of time people spend as being postdocs. It's not, I think, unusual, certainly in the sort of evolutionary biology, to be a postdoc for 2, 3, or 4 years. And I'm coming up, I will have been a postdoc for 5, I think, when I finish my funding in the end of next year.
I came across a little statistic when I was reading about postdocs in the past week, and it refers to U.S. postdocs, and this is something that came from a report from the National Research Council in 1998, and they report that the average age of a postdoc is 32, and that the average length of time spent in the postdoc world is 5 years. And I think you do make a really good point, Tim, that probably 20 years ago, that would have been a completely different story, where people would have spent much less time and probably been much younger at the time that they're wrapping up their postdoctoral studies and moving on to leading a lab or leading a research group.
And I think that is part of the problem, my hypothesis, that because a lot of our supervisors, not all of them, the younger ones not, but excuse me, Chair. A lot of the more senior ones, or I guess if you're maybe in clinical sciences where it's possible to skip, or at least it was, to skip a postdoc, have never done the postdoc, so they don't know what it's like, and perhaps there's a bit of a lack of empathy there. Not that it's a malicious lack of empathy, but just sort of inexperience with what it means to be a postdoc, what it's like to be a postdoc, the reason why people postdoc, is you no longer, it's very rare for people just to transition straight into a tenure track faculty research job. It's very rare indeed.
I think another one of the big statistics out there is that about 20% of postdocs will make the transition onto the faculty research position.
Yeah.
Which is fairly terrifying, because there's 5 of us in the room right now.
Who will be eliminated next?
Yeah, call on in. Yeah. We'll take your votes. Yeah.
We're kicking Julia off the island. Yeah, actually, in this document that we got at one of the postdoc cafe workshops, this was a 10-step plan for better postdoc training, and it was published by the Postdoctoral Fellows Focus Group in The Scientist in January of 2006. And as you were saying, and their stat is, fewer than 1/3 of postdocs will end up. And they cite 2 sources for that. One is the journal FASEB. Do you guys know what FASEB stands for?
Last week. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
For those of you who are keen, it was FASEB, Volume 17, 2003. And then there was another NSF, National Science Foundation, brief. So big, reputable sources giving these stats out. And as you say, it is quite challenging, terrifying.
Yeah, I guess for many people, a postdoc becomes a holding pattern after a couple of years, because they couldn't secure a faculty position at times. And that's, I think, why it's so important that... And that was one of the ideas about the postdoc club, to provide training and to give postdocs an opportunity to broaden their horizon, that if you are voted off the island, I guess, you might see other options.
I was just going to say that before we get too much into the challenges of being a postdoc, I think we'll kick in with a song. This is Buck 65 doing Bachelor of Science.
And take care of my appearances. Keep out of my trouble and trifle interferences. The Bachelor of Science, I run my own company. Somebody call me, my number's unlisted. Some stories are straight and others come twisted. Women's intuition and young gal's luck. Every girl I know has a crush on who? Boys may cheat, either that or they might leave her. All I wanna do is dance, I've got Saturday night fever. So let me rearrange my sock drawers alone behind locked doors. And I scrambled eggs for breakfast and sit and read the box scores. But I'm not trying to score points with. I'd rather read the Bible than use its pages to roll joints with. I get what I want, but got no one to share it with. A feeling in my chest and nothing to compare it with. The Bachelor of Science, I run my own company. Show me your photographs and tell me a ghost story. As long as it doesn't involve your ex-boyfriend.
I'm no good at being a slave. I'm thinking about graduate school. You know, to become a barber.
This can't go on. Today is the day we fight back.
It's already 10 o'clock.
Oh, you're right. Tomorrow is the day we fight back.
You're listening to My Science Project on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Julia.
I'm your sometimes co-host, Anne.
And we've got Sonia, Tim, and Louise with us today, and the show is all about postdocs. Wickety, wickety. So we were talking about what it means to be a postdoc, and it's a stepping stone to go on to be an independent researcher. And as Anne very wisely suggested, I think it's time that we hype up exactly what it is we do and why we are so useful in the lab or in the whatever, if you're an arts postdoc in whatever place they work.
Exactly, and just as much as we're in an in-between phase in terms of career pathways, you know, we do spend 2 to 5 years, as we mentioned, as a postdoc, and a lot can be done in 2 to 5 years by some highly trained PhD-holding researchers. So, I mean, that's what we want to do with the next little bit of time, is just talk about exactly how we contribute to the university and how we contribute to research here.
Let loose. Now is your time.
I mean, certainly one thing we talked about is publications, and publications are the currency of grant applications, which are made by our bosses, our supervisors, our PIs, whatever you want to call them. And if it weren't for publications, there wouldn't be success, likely, of most grant applications. And that data comes from, I believe, predominantly postdocs and PhD students. I think, would everyone agree with me on that?
Yeah.
The workhorses of the lab, I guess.
I know. I mean, earlier today I saw quite a high-standing researcher at UBC stand in front of a young group of students and say, putting up a picture of his group, he said, you know, these are the workhorses behind what I do. I write the grants. These are the people, the postdocs and the PhDs, who help me keep my grants alive. And I think that's certainly one of the most incredible contributions that postdocs can make.
Yeah, and this fellow is incredibly well-funded and incredibly successful and quite renowned. And, yeah, openly attributing a lot of his success currently to the postdocs who generate the ideas.
It's interesting. I'm not quite sure how it works in Canada, but I know several other countries, they, in order to measure the productivity of researchers within a university, the yardstick that they use, instead of how many dollars do you bring in, is how many publications do you put out. And as we just mentioned, postdocs are a big part of producing publications, because the faculty member who runs the lab is tied up with administration, with grant writing, with teaching, with a bunch of other things just to keep the lab going. And so they generally don't have time to be in the lab doing the hands-on work. If you want to be able to advance science, and if you want to be able to, or whatever area of research you're in, and if you want to be able to bring reputation to the university and to yourself and your area of research, you need to be generating data, and that means time spent in the lab with hands doing the work. And postdocs are a very big contributor to that.
Well, it struck me that postdocs are the sort of next level down in the lab pyramid. Often you have the PI at the top, and then 2 or 3 postdocs, and maybe 4 or 5 graduate students, then any number of undergraduates potentially helping out in the lab. But it's that next level down from the PI that the postdocs represent, and it's typically who the graduate students come to when they've got some minor problem about a bit of equipment, some sort of statistical analysis, something that's not worth bothering the extremely busy PI about, but something that still needs to be asked. And we represent a sort of sort of next level up of experience, like a teaching assistant in a school. You know, you don't want to bother the teacher, but there's this someone who's a bit more senior, but eminently more botherable than a PI. And so we're just we fit in there. And if you take postdocs out of the equation, then the lab loses its balance, and there are too many graduate students who are the people who are producing the data to be supervised by the individual PI, and the lab would lose its productivity drastically because not the questions just would go unasked or that wrong would happen.
And I think we should also point out that although graduate students are a fantastic source of data, because all they're doing, like most postdocs, unless they're hired to do a bit of teaching on the side, is pure research. But graduate students, unlike postdocs, are doing the training, they're getting their license to research, whereas postdocs already have it. So there isn't that learning curve. At least there's a learning curve in being a postdoc, but it's after you've learned to do that thesis research that the graduate students and master students are still learning to do.
So we've touched on the fact that postdocs produce data, postdocs contribute to publications, which leads to grants, postdocs give ideas, and postdocs offer a lot of training and teaching. But there's also the element of patents that come out of a lot of labs, and that certainly earns the university a lot of money in addition to individuals. And behind patents, just as behind publications, you have research and data. And I think that's certainly another contribution that postdocs are making to both the university and to their labs.
There is something else that we haven't touched on with the contribution of postdocs, and that is for an individual, this will vary very much depending on the people involved, but a person who's running the lab, so the faculty member, is often one of few people working in that area of research in the university. And in terms of being able to intellectually develop or further their theories, they need somebody who's very familiar with that topic as well. And postdocs often represent someone who they can bounce ideas off with, have very in-depth discussions to further ideas for their research, which isn't always able to be achieved by talking to other faculty members in the same place.
Yeah, so we're a source of fresh ideas. We often do our postdoc in a different institute than we did our graduate degree, so our PhD and our master's. So we're bringing new skills. We're bringing different networks along with us, different academic connections, and networking, like in most jobs, is incredibly important. And, yeah, these new techniques that we're bringing and different perspectives along with us, it's a really important point.
That's the more or less the whole point of my postdoctoral fellowship at the moment. It's a European Union-funded fellowship. I'm actually employed by a university in France currently, and then I've been sent over to UBC for 2 years to work on these sticklebacks, and then I'm going to come
back. Those are your fish, right?
Those are my fish, sorry, yeah. These little fish that live in all around the Northern Hemisphere. And now, and then after the end of this year, I'm going to go back to France for a year, bringing with me all the experience that I've gained whilst I've been working over in Canada, and taking that back to France. So it's the whole purpose of this this postdoc.
Yeah, truly international affair.
Truly.
And that's definitely another benefit of the job, that we're very portable. You know, we can go to a lot of cities that have a university or a research industry, and we can often slot right in. And it's a pretty exciting thing, and it's certainly something that has attracted me to the job.
Definitely. The traveling aspect is one reason why I got into this work, other than just being curious about things and wanting to satisfy and indulge that curiosity. The idea that you can travel annually to all of those conferences, and we never, ever take time off to be tourists. All of that is really great and a really fantastic part of the job.
And it's also one of the few jobs that allows you the opportunity to live and work in another country, which is something that's definitely attracted me to being a postdoc.
It's amazingly easy to it's a very positive thing that the governments are very into researchers moving around. So when you apply for a Canadian visa, all you need to do is write on it that you're coming to do research at UBC, and they're like, oh, okay, here we go. They don't require making the normal requirements that you need to demonstrate that a Canadian can't do your job just as well as you can. They take it for granted that bringing researchers and moving them around is just beneficial for the country as a whole.
It's definitely something we see a lot of in the news, this concept of brain drain or brain gain. And so, I mean, highly trained, intelligent academics are sort of a commodity that's almost desirable, sort of in the international immigration circuit. And it obviously it gives many of us an edge for transitioning to other countries.
That's definitely true. And Tim, I wanted to just mention something that you raised. I thought it was a really good way of putting it. Like, you're talking about publications and the cost of doing publications and that postdocs. If you've got a postdoc, you're kind of getting publications for free, as it were. And yeah. I think that's important to note, especially in the context of the speed at which research gets done and where Canadian, for example, and here Canadian taxpayers' monies are going.
Something we should probably bring up at this point is that there are two very different kinds of postdoc here at UBC. There's the kind where the principal investigator has received a whole bunch of money, and within that grant that he's written, he has said, I would like a postdoc to come along and complete X project, and this project's typically too complicated or too advanced to be given completely to a graduate student. So they write money for a postdoc to come in, and then they advertise the job, and postdocs apply, and they get the job and come work with the guy. And then there are other kind of postdocs who apply for their own money. So I applied myself to the European Union saying I would like to come to the UBC. And these are the sort of postdocs that they receive money from outside sources. I'm on European Union money. It doesn't cost Canadian taxpayers anything. And I come to UBC and I create publications here for my boss with his name on them. And it costs him very little indeed.
And that's where the idea of the publications for free is most emphasized, I think. I think there's a lot of other differences that we're all starting to learn about when you come with your own money versus being paid through the university. And I know that's something that you've been particularly interested in, Tim, lately, in the context of benefits.
Yeah, it might be a good time to kind of segue into, like, what it is, especially at UBC. What are the challenges of being a postdoc, and what would we like to see the life of a postdoc be like at this university?
Well, so I guess I was bad for a number of years during my graduate school and probably during my undergraduate. I didn't floss,
the truth comes out.
I got here and I went to the dentist and he says, "Oh, you know, you need 16 fillings." I've had 12 of them, and I've purchased. I came along, and knowing I was going to have these, I went to the UBC sort of health benefits section. I assumed that since I was appointed at UBC that I would be able to access these benefits, but I can't. And in fact, no postdoc who brings their own money to UBC is eligible for any of the benefits that are afforded to people who receive their wages through UBC. And that kind of strikes me as being unfair.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I was on external funding for 2 years, and I was really shocked to find out that my membership in the UBC health plan was severed at that point because I was no longer being paid, even though I was actually being still paid by UBC Human Resources. It was coming from an external organization, and I talked with other people about this who were in a similar situation, and we were all stymied that we're actually saving the university money for that period of time, and yet it's like we're being penalized for being successful in winning that external funding and saving the institute money.
And it also makes it unfair when you've got all postdocs are at a similar level in terms of academic status, but support from either the level of salary that you get or level of benefits that go along with that salary differs, and it very much depends on your individual circumstances.
Yeah, that's an issue, is the non-standardization of employment for postdocs, not only at UBC, but lots of other institutes in Canada and abroad.
Well, I think the same issue's been raised in the UK and in the US as well, and I know those two countries have the postdocs there have got together to form an organisation to try and rectify that, and it's definitely an issue that needs to be addressed in Canada.
Yeah, in fact, there's the NPA, the National Postdoc Association, in the States, and in Britain. This was in Nature in May of 2006, a little article called Britain's Postdocs Unite under the Scientists and Society section, and we're British postdocs. They say only about a quarter of UK postdocs get their tenured position, so it's even worse there than North America, and that they came together to make the equivalent of the NPA in the States. And I think they were funded, the UK Research Councils agreed to fund an inaugural meeting at University College London, and that's where they sorted that out. And that was in June of this year. So that's two major Western countries with national organizations, but Canada doesn't have one.
Certainly in all the reading that I've done, it seems like postdocs are really finally starting to unify themselves. Only in the past 5 years or so that you start to see universities with web pages and programs dedicated to the postdoc position and role at the university. And it's something that we're definitely struggling with here at UBC, because it's hard to account for who's a postdoc and where are they and how do you find a postdoc? How many of us are there even at UBC? I don't believe we know that number. No. And it's largely due to a lack of registration and a lack of sort of accountability of who's who and who's where. It's certainly something that many of us in this room are interested in addressing and improving.
One of the challenges with that is that most postdocs, as we've already mentioned, are only at a university for 2 to 5 years as a postdoc.
And in fact, just to interject, UBC defines us as within 3 years of our graduating with our PhD, as do other institutes in Canada.
Yeah, that's right. So because we're such a temporary lot, by the time often you're coming from another town or if not another country, as you can tell by the accents in the room, that by the time you get yourself established and start to look around you and see the situation of postdocs, it's often not enough time to get really involved in a movement to help standardise the situation for postdocs. So that's one of the difficulties of trying to either unite postdocs or get postdocs to have a voice, is that we are such a temporary and diverse group.
But I'm as temporary here as a graduate student. In fact, I've been here longer than quite a lot of undergrads, and I think that's probably what's changed a lot, is that we are now actually a fairly stable feature of the university. And we're here, and I've heard people say that there are probably 1,000 postdocs here, which is roughly on the par with the number of graduate students, the same sort of order of magnitude. There are probably a few more graduate students.
Yeah, I think it's about 3,000 grad students.
Right. It's probably about 3 to 1, something like that.
But given that the UBC... if you look at the sort of faculty and staff pages, they have separate mentions of the people who run the daycare centres and things like this, then surely this huge group of postdocs should receive recognition. And it seems that there's a stock phrase that the university uses when it talks about the university community, which is students, faculty and staff. And since we don't fall under any of those criteria, we're just missed out.
Well, though we are faculty, but it's...
I'm not.
I am. But see, that shows the inconsistency, that some of us are and some of us aren't. And I'm not sure how they define it. Like, maybe it's external funding versus internal funding.
So.
That could be it.
Not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
One thing I was going to point out is that when I was also researching and reading around the topic for the show, postdocs, I came across a postdoc website at McGill University in the province of Quebec in Montreal, and I learned that in the past 5 years, the province of Quebec, Ministry of Education, required all universities to register postdocs. And so from that movement, sort of in early 2000, I think they were able to really unify themselves and come up with a plan where they're incorporated. At McGill, they happen to be treated very much like grad students and share a common center for socializing and activities, as well as sharing common benefits, etc. And it's certainly interesting and relevant to point out that, you know, there are a lot of other universities that have plans in place that address the issues that we're talking about today, and sort of our demands are not outside the realm of possibility and the realm of history.
It's true. Like, we're not a bizarre group of irate postdocs sitting here, and not at all, because you mentioned University of McGill, and this was in sciencecareers.org, an article about U of T postdocs, and they also, like the McGill plan, gained an organization and a status at that university, which I think is the biggest in Canada, U of T.
I would believe
top
yeah.
three for sure. And they also went in with, I think, the faculty of graduate students. They're considered trainees. They'd receive benefits. Sort of all the things that we would like to see here at UBC and that McGill instituted for its students there. And I think U of T also decided to mirror UBC's policy and say that postdoc is defined by someone within 3 years of getting their PhD to do their research.
Yeah, and there was a recent article in Science, I think, that said that the University of Ottawa also organized its postdocs, and they only have, I think, 100 postdocs or 120. The article, it sounded
really
very low. So I was surprised that, I mean, I was delighted that they're organized, but I was also surprised that they would kind of bother with, you know, organizing just 100 to 200 people. But maybe the number was wrong.
Well, you know, it's, I'll just say this and then I'll hand it over to you, Louise. I saw an article again in sciencecareers.org about that. And it's funny, this one fellow got involved. His name is Howard Alper, and he's a Canadian chemist. And I'm not sure what his position was exactly. It's not coming up in this article, but he and another colleague got involved to actually actively put postdocs at the University of Ottawa in with the Faculty of Graduate. They called it the Faculty of Graduate and Postdoctoral Studies. And he went on to talk about how they managed to corral, or at least, I don't know, get a hold of postdocs as they came through the door at the U of O, get them to register. They did it in conjunction, I think, with a staff card or a library card or something. And this article, which was published in June of 2006, it went on to say it actually wasn't that expensive to do it, to put postdocs in with the graduate students. And I know that putting those two groups together is a touchy issue for a lot of us because it harkens back to us being students instead of post students, like got the degree. And so that's, it's sort of contentious, but I guess the point that I'm trying to make here is that the U of O did it, and maybe they do have much fewer postdocs, and this guy who was fairly high up was saying, you know, it was fairly easy and cheap to do it, and it's made a huge difference. So, sorry, Louisa.
Yeah, something that I think might be worth pointing out to listeners who are less familiar to what we're talking about is that one of the things that we would like to see is the university recognising in their... what's the plan called?
The People Plan?
The People Plan.
The TREC, yeah.
Or TREC 2010, which is basically a view for the future of the university, is that we would... Currently it talks about students, staff and faculty, and there's no mention of postdocs. And one thing that we would like to see is a mention of postdocs in there, just so that the human resources sections and the salary sections and the benefits sections all realise that there is this large group that does exist, and are then, and I know from when we've been in contact with people like human resources about what training can we access as postdoctoral fellows, they've been more than willing to try and help us, but I've been quite surprised at how few of them actually realise that postdocs do exist and what our role in the university is. So I think one of the initial things that would be very beneficial is if the university recognised that postdocs do exist and included that in their future plans for the university, and even things on web pages and such.
I think a huge problem heretofore is that there's a chicken and egg problem in that there's no unified body of postdocs because there's no way of knowing who the postdocs are. But then again, you can't get together and ask for more recognition unless you can unify yourself. So I guess we're going to have to either try and snowball up from a small group up until we've persuaded a lot of people that we need to ask the university for this recognition and these things. Or maybe we can persuade the university itself that it needs to write down on a bit of paper every time that it appoints a postdoc to the UB, to be a person at UBC, that it writes down that they're actually a postdoc, takes some details and adds them into some sort of postdoc society.
I think what we'll do is we'll break for a tune and then come back and talk explicitly about what it is that we'd like to see changing at UBC and how we're trying to affect that change. So before we do that, Tim, do you want to set this song up for us since you brought it in?
How do you mean set it up?
Like, oh, well, what just, is it that you...
I just really like this song.
it's track three on your.
It's track three. This is this is Please, Please, Please Let Me Get What I Want by the Smiths.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is my science project.
Good times for a change. See, the look I've had can make a good man turn bad. So please, 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 let me get what I want this time. Haven't had a dream in a long time. See, the life I've had can make a good man back. So for once in my life, let me get what I want. Lord knows it would be the first time. Lord knows it would be the first time.
What about your super intelligence?
When I had that, there was too much pressure to use it. All I want out of life is to be a monkey of moderate intelligence who wears a suit. That's why I've decided to transfer to business school.
No!
Hi there, we're welcome back to My Science Project on CITR 101.9 FM. Thanks to our caller, apparently Morrissey was a bit slow. I don't know, I would have liked to have heard that rendition. Please, please.
Maybe they need too much coffee or something.
At any rate, it fits our theme of asking UBC to give us stuff that we think we deserve. So we're talking about that. We're talking about postdocs as a group, what we think could be done at UBC to improve our productivity, to improve our contribution to the university, and to improve the quality of our working life at UBC and across Canada as well. And that there are many other organizations at different Canadian universities that are already established for us, and that, in fact, the US and the UK both have national postdoc groups to support and advocate for postdocs.
I think one thing that struck me is that until I actually came along to this postdoc cafe, and I sort of glanced at the Nature article when it came out, I didn't realize that she realized that I was missing out on these things that really I should be being able to get hold of. And I think this is a growing awareness all around the world among postdocs that that we really have been a bit neglected by universities in general. And now that awareness is growing, I think it would be... I think people are going to start thinking when they've received a pot of money or they're applying for a job at UBC, they're going to think, well, you know, what are the benefits like for me if I turn up with this big pot of money that I've just won from whoever? And if that sort of information is something people regularly look at, then UBC research may take a hit.
Yeah, I mean, UBC wants to be competitive with other institutes, and if it's greener pastures for postdocs at U of T or McGill or the U of Ottawa, or U of C has its own postdoc association, then maybe postdocs will be more inclined to go to those places rather than to come here. And I'm sure that's not what the administration wants at this university.
I think one of the most frustrating things about it for me is that UBC has a really fabulous benefits package out there that's on offer to many, many people. And it includes things such as career development assistance and subsidized travel passes, all kinds of health extended and dental benefits, that sort of thing. I mean, there's really a lot out there that we could and should be benefiting from. It's one of the most frustrating things that it's not standardized. And another issue that I think we talked about when we met prior to the show today is standardizing of salaries,
yeah.
Because that also is not fixed or set, and it's something that may vary from lab to lab or from year to year. And it certainly would give a greater sense of security to the job.
Yeah, and it's certainly something that I was a part of the, I guess, I don't know if it's the original task force, but it was like 2004, 2005, UBC's Office of VP Research decided to get a group together, and it was kind of like the University of Ottawa. It was, I think, a lot of faculty or administrators, people in high power positions who took the initiative to put together a group of us that included postdocs to talk about how UBC could make positive change for us. And one of the things that came out of that, they included arts and sciences postdocs, was that it's really tricky to come up with a minimal salary or a minimum salary because arts are so much more poorly funded than sciences, and that some postdocs in the arts wouldn't even be able to hold their position. Like, kind of something was better than nothing because they're getting paid $25,000 a year or less than that. Like, I actually heard one quote was $12,500 a year for one postdoc at UBC, which is shameful.
Yeah. Another one of the challenges that's kind of the converse to that is that there are some fields and faculties that are very highly paid in industry, such as the pharmaceutical industry or the engineering industry, and they do seek out PhDs to take on those positions and can offer a really high salary. And so if academia can't be competitive with industrial job offers, you can see that it would be really easy for someone to turn down an offer that's, you know, half the value of an industrial position. And, you know, there are a few categories, I think, of postdocs or of faculties that would fall in there.
Yeah, certainly. And especially if less than a third of us are actually going to make into faculty positions, that lure of going into industry and making decent money, having benefits, having job security is really strong. And I think that's another aspect that it's hard being a postdoc, as it is in many other disciplines, without job security. Like, it's a high-risk field that we go into.
And I think it is a high-risk field because of where our money is coming from. It's coming from grants that we don't necessarily write ourselves, and they are short-term as well. So there's no guarantee that there's going to be a constant flow of money into your lab where you're working and where you may be dependent on for salary. And certainly as conditions become harsh and money becomes less available for funding research, whether it be arts or sciences, you can see that there becomes less availability. And you could be in a lab that's flush for a couple of years and then not. there's no guarantee that your position will last.
Yeah. And we were talking earlier before this show about the challenge of affecting change and sort of making a stand, if you will, because there are so many of us that there's always someone ready to step in to a job, because there are people who are like, well, it's better than nothing. It's better than being unemployed. At least I'm doing something in my field. So in that sense, it's hard to sort of say, well, no, like, I won't work in these conditions or I want these changes made.
It makes you feel very disposable or replaceable.
In a way. And I think one of us, was it you, Tim, or Sonia, talked about seasonal workers, like fruit laborers. Like, you kind of go where the fruit or where the money is at that time, and you work really hard and you hope things turn out for you. And
I think one of the challenges of that is that you mentioned before that the average age of postdocs in the US is 32 years old, and that's fairly similar in Canada, I would imagine. And by the time you're 32, generally most people are in relationships that they want to keep and starting to have families. And so I think things like benefits packages are really important, because if you want to attract top postdocs to your institution, then you want to be able to support them and their family. If they can't bring their family across, then they're not going to come. So I think that's really important, because by the time you come out of a PhD, most people don't have a stack of money behind them, and so they need the salary and the support if you want to encourage them onto those careers in research.
I think coming out the other side is that it's when I finished my PhD in the UK, I think I was 26, 27, and if I'd become a professor at that stage, I would have been barely 3 or 4 years older than the students I was teaching. And since I've been doing a postdoc, and now I'm 31, I now feel that I've spent enough time learning all these sort of people management skills and teaching skills that just would be essential were I to become faculty. But those are things I've gone out and gotten myself, and it would be greatly beneficial, I think, for universities to offer much more to postdocs, to say, look, we recognize that you are going to be the faculty, and maybe even faculty that we want to employ. So let's try and train you. And it's Center for Teaching and Academic Growth here at UBC is actually offers us free courses, I found out. Anyone can go along to those if they're part of the teaching community, which is really cool.
Yeah. In the last 5 minutes, I think we should talk about what we're doing to change things at UBC, including a petition that we've got going. And just before we leap into that, I think it would be nice to summarize. These are 10 changes, and this is going back to that document that we all received at one workshop on which the LSI Postdoc Cafe, or the Life Sciences Institute Cafe, runs, and it was from the scientists, and they came up with these 10 points for postdoc training, and they include everything that we've talked about here. So it just goes to reiterate that these aren't crazy things that we want to see implemented, that these are things that other major universities have done, and this is actually according to a formal study done what was recommended, and it includes things like regular reviews of the training process, a clearly defined length of training, however, if you want it 3 years, 5 years, whatever, courses and workshops, which we participated in, which, I mean, you do learn on your own by doing in the lab, supervising and the like, but it's great to have an expert come in or just someone who's been there a few years ago and talk about their experiences. They talk about educate trainees about research employment opportunities, not just in academia, but in industry, because if not all of us are going to make it into tenure track, it's good to plan for that. It's good to plan for the future, and maybe some people would prefer industry. They want standardized benefits for postdocs. I mean, that makes your personal life so much smoother. You can dedicate more time to your work. It's less stressful. They want a mechanism established for grievances, which makes sense. Establish a postdoctoral committee to liaise amongst the faculty and postdocs, and establish, as the Life Sciences Institute has done, a local postdoc society for meeting other postdocs and networking that way and learning from each other. Establish an orientation at the institution for new postdocs, which would be a fantastic way to then track who's coming in to the institute and make a central list. And then finally, their 10th point is to establish an Office of Postdoctoral Affairs. So these are all things that have been demonstrated to have worked at other major reputable universities. And they're things that I think we can all agree we'd like to see UBC do. So on that note, I think I'd like to turn over. We could talk about what we've actually been doing lately to try and get UBC, which is, it has been very willing. It's stepped up to the plate on many occasions, but there's some kind of barrier to actually affecting this change, and I'm not sure what, but let's bash it down.
In terms of support, UBC is very supportive in small things, and the LSC is very supportive of the whole idea of a club, and they gave us money and the rooms,
and that was
really
also
encouraged. That
it was instigated by the acting director as well, so again, yeah. It's like it's faculty who are driving that change.
Yeah, but there's the major steps, yeah, seem to be a little bit hesitant, and they don't seem to want to commit, or it seems to, I don't know, because UBC is so big, does it take so long for these things to commit? If it's the amount of money, I don't know.
We've only really been talking about this at any great length for the last couple of months, though, so we should probably give them a
well,
time
they have,
to find that feed.
But they did that postdoc committee 2 years ago, and that sort of fizzled, and I don't know why.
It's a real shame. I think what we need to do is to... Well, what I'm actually trying to do is I've written a letter that I'm going to be sending to the president as and when I president of the university, and I'm trying to get as many postdocs as possible to sign up to this letter and say, we support this, we believe there should be equity for postdocs, we believe we should be recognized as part of the university community, and we should have access to the benefits. And hopefully, maybe if the president and the administration see that there are a lot of postdocs out there, more than they probably thought, and that we're able to speak together and say that this is actually, we think you should do something about this, then maybe they'll get moving, or maybe they won't.
So where can people go to sign this letter, and what are some resources that we can throw out there for fellow postdocs listening, or for maybe grad students who want to start preparing for the next stage in their career?
I think one of the best places to start is by going to the website for the LSI Postdoc Coffee Club, which is here somewhere.
It's www.lsi.ubc.ca and then /postdocclub. But I think if you go to the main webpage, the lsi.ubc.ca, there's a link right there that takes you.
There's also a link on the zoology homepage.
Fantastic. That's a great page, actually. There are lots of resources at the zoology website.
So, yeah, I think a copy of this letter to the president and a sort of little thing you can, another page on which you can collect signatures is available there. So if any postdocs feel that they want to contribute towards this effort, then they, maybe they could download this letter. It's a PDF. And take it around that the people are the postdocs they know in their department or the postdocs they've met, and send it back to me. There's a, my name's Tim Vines, and I'm in the UBC Zoology, and I'm sure internal mail will find me somehow.
The other thing is that on the webpage for the postdoc club, there is an email address that you can subscribe to, and that is all the communication for the postdoc club. Or you could send, if you're looking for access to the letter, you could send an email to that address, which is postdoc-cafe@interchange.ubc.ca, and somebody will send the letter to you and you can sign it up and return it, which would be great. The more support we get, the more people are going to listen to us.
And I think we're planning to do two letters, if I remember correctly. One is exclusively postdocs, but then we'd like to get other people on board who support what we're trying to do. So if you're not a postdoc and you're listening and you want to help out, we welcome your signature. It just won't be quite on that letter, but it will be on a supporting document. So it's an invitation to everyone.
Yeah, especially I'd like to approach heads of department and members of the faculty, because if the Faculty Association isn't on side saying that these postdocs are important to us and we need them for our research, then I think with that we're going to have a much, the university is going to be able to realise more easily that that this is an important issue that needs to be dealt with.
Another resource I think we should note is the Office of VP Research itself. They've got some fantastic links on their website, which is www.research.ubc.ca. And from there, they also have a link that goes on to other websites, like the NPA, National Postdoc Association. They have a listserv sign up there. They try to get us all on a single list. So that listserv was up and running. It might have fizzled.
I haven't seen
since
an email
then
on it for a long time.
Yeah, so they've got a guide though for new postdocs at UBC. They've got information about professional development workshops, which the LSI website does too, and stuff about postdoc orientation and UBC policies. If you want to see the current UBC policies on postdocs, you can go to the Office of VP Research website to check that out.
See the glazed eyes. Touch the dead skin, feel the cold lips, and know the warmth of the hip-death goddess.
Touch my heart.